To the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, Anna Wilcox, and Dave Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Eric Galatis, Isabel Charlet, Roz Brown, and Farah Siddiqui. The director for the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast for this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Catherine. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. USAID was the world's largest development agency, funding efforts across the globe attempting to improve and save the lives of the poor. It was also one of the first targets of President Trump's second administration. Trump cut more than 80% of its programs, closed the headquarters, and fired nearly all of their 10,000 employees. It's left foreign aid work around the world in uncertain territory. KBOO's Anna Wilcox spoke to Klaas, an activist from South Africa, about the impact of USAID funding cuts on HIV and AIDS services and harm reduction in South Africa.
My name is Klaas Mtsweni, and I work for the South African Network of People Who Use Drugs, but also a national leader within the South African Civil Society Forum space. And my presentation basically was on the implication of the U.S. funding cuts in South Africa for harm reduction. And basically that's what I do. I also sit at the CCM level. So mostly what we do is budget advocacy. That's one of my roles that I do, is like advocate for budget for people who use drugs in South Africa, whether looking at global fund, looking at domestic funding, looking at PEPFAR, CDC, or USAID. Yeah.
So what is the funding situation? So I guess what harm reduction services are currently funded? Are they How well are they funded?
Okay. So we have our biggest funder or donor for harm reduction in South Africa is the Global Fund. It's funding 8 districts, which is in 4 provinces. And then followed by PEPFAR CDC, which is funding 2 districts and around 5,000 service beneficiaries are accessing services, particularly OST, HIV-related health, as well as needle and syringe programs. But you know that the US is not for needle and syringes. So the agreement is between Global Fund and PEPFAR CDC. Global Fund procures needles for the PEPFAR-funded districts. Yeah. Yep. So, but we also have another domestic funded harm reduction site, which is also is big, but also they don't provide, they don't procure needle and syringes. They are procured by Global Fund also. They're providing OST in the capital city of South Africa, which is Pretoria. So I would say in terms of coverage, we have harm reduction, but it's not that well covered because we have 9 provinces in South Africa and you find harm reduction in like what, 4 provinces in total, 4 or 5 provinces in total. And in those 4 or 5 provinces, we have 54 districts and harm reduction is only in 11 districts. So yeah, it's not well covered at all.
So what does that mean if it's not well covered? That means, are people are suffering, or what does that mean if it's not covered?
It simply means the targets that we have set for ourselves as well as globally to end HIV by 2030 or when, we are not going to reach them, realistically speaking. We have people that are 10 to 12% high probability of contracting HIV that are not receiving preventative services that will help them not contract HIV. And we expect to meet the 95% targets. Simply means we won't because of that. What we need is to scale up harm reduction to cover all the districts in South Africa, all the provinces, all the cities. Because also what we see is people moving from districts that are not being serviced to districts that are serviced, causing homelessness, causing a lot of other social issues for those cities. So, but the biggest one is the HIV. We are not going to be able to end it if we are not providing sufficient coverage of harm reduction. And then the other biggest worry is hepatitis is going to become, if it's not there already, a pandemic in South Africa. One, because we don't have any medication. Two is public health facilities. There's still stigma and discrimination and everything else, and people, and there are long queues in South Africa in public health facilities. People wake up at 4 o'clock to go to a public health facility. A person who uses drugs will not do that. The first thing that we prioritize is our next fix. And you can't expect me to go and sit 8 hours in a public health facility. So yeah, it's not going to work.
I'm from the US,
yeah.
So that's, yeah. sorry. but if the new, like with the new administration, like obviously they made really radical decisions about canceling everything. how has that impacted harm reduction service? Like, what's been the impact so far?
It depends from which lens are you looking at. We've been hit hard, and we are not, like currently South Africa and America are not seeing eye to eye, and we are expecting more worse to come. Because research, for example, has been unfunded by the US in South Africa. Government public health facilities. So the agreement between, the US aid was providing about 17% of the HIV response in South Africa, and mostly covering the rural areas, covering like your doctors and some facilities. We have lost about 23,000 staff members that were directly dealing with seeing to clients. Some clinics have closed. But the most hit are the NGOs, organizations on the ground that are mobilizing communities, that are doing sensitizations, that are doing testing, tracing. Most, like, we have about 150 of organizations that have closed. The only organizations that are surviving are those that have multiple funding. But as to how long are those going to survive also is an issue. In terms of harm reduction, as I indicated, we have only two sites or districts that are funded through PEPFAR CDC. They were closed initially when Mr. President Trump came into power, when they announced the, what do you call them? When it started announcing the cuts, yeah. They were closed for like 16, if I'm not mistaken, 16 days. And then there was that judgment that came from one of the courts in America to say the PEPFAR CDC grants that were already in existence, they need to continue. However, in those 16 days, clients could not get any services. We don't know, because we don't have CLM, community monitoring, on the ground currently. That was also funded by the US to monitor the impact of the US funding cuts. So we don't know what the impact, like the direct, the immediate impact in terms of HIV, hepatitis, sharing of needles, and how many clients went back to using because they couldn't get OST, they couldn't get any services during that period. The services came back, but the trust between the community and the service provider was also impacted very harshly because some of the clients are not returning back to services because they don't trust that we are going to be able to sustain them in OST, for example. And yeah, so those two districts were closed and then they reopened, but there's uncertainty again because we don't know what's going to happen after September because the agreement or the grant ends in September. So we don't know whether those services are going to continue. But the other worrying part is the Global Fund has indicated that they are not going to take over or close the gap that will be created or that has been created by the US pulling out funding in South Africa.
So do you know if there are any current plans to kind of triage? So if there is no, if that funding gap isn't closed, is there, are there any, or can you speak about any alternatives that might bridge some of the gaps, or is it just everything kind of, falling?
One, I know that the South African government has stepped up recently to announce some budget availability to work with civil society to trace the clients that have tested positive. There's like 1.1 million clients that are missing that are HIV positive that are not on treatment. So they are working with civil society to find those clients. However, the problem with that is which organizations on the ground or civil society are you going to work with if there is no funding for them, if they were dependent on the US funding? And also in terms of whether there is a plan in place right now by the South African government to close the gap, we are also trying to find that out since I don't know how many months now or weeks has the funding been cut. And the only thing that we are hearing is the treasurer this. We are going to speak with the treasurer to see if there is money available or not. And so far there hasn't been any tangible outcomes of that. So the Department of Health has been saying they are going to speak with Treasurer to see if they can make funds available. But recently, I think it was last week, or 2 weeks ago, the Minister of Health, he was announcing how he's going to close the gap. And to our surprise, he said the government is only going to employ about 200 or 1,000, I can't recall, but between not even 1,000, 200 staff members. Remember, I said staff that we have lost about 22,000 that were working directly with clients, interfacing with clients. And now, due to like no money in the country, they can only employ about 200. We have seen the government trying to raise the VAT to like get some money from the people in the country, which it was also an issue that was fought, and they came back like last week to say they were increasing VAT by 0.5%. In total, they wanted to increase VAT about 2% in order for them to be able to keep the country running. But South Africa is still a developing country and most people cannot afford that. So some opposition parties and the citizens, they said, no, that's not going to happen. The VAT was passed in parliament and then the government was taken to court. And now, last week, they've recalled the increase of VAT. So that means there will be no money to cover the gap that has been created by the paper ban, because the money that the country needs is about $430 US. And there is no money lying around in the country to cover that gap. So the government might say whatever that they say in public, which is nothing thus far, because they know that there is no way they can find that money. They went to the Global Fund. The Global Fund said, we can't. We have our own targets, we have our own responsibilities, and we have agreed with PEFACDC that we are not going to go into the districts that they were providing services to. So the situation is still going to be worse. We haven't seen anything. Like, we haven't seen anything. We can expect the increase of deaths through HIV and AIDS again, going back into the 90s, very soon.
That's horrible. I'm so sorry. That's a very like dire situation. That's you know, that's a humanitarian crisis. That's an you know.
But they've announced that the AU was going to step in somehow to provide, I don't know whether it's in this year or next year, but we are not sure with that, because we also know the promises that some of the Western countries can make and never fulfill. We have seen that in the past. So the situation is bad. And like, it's bad in terms of the rise of HIV again, people not getting treatment, and people losing their jobs, their livelihoods, and you can imagine. So, yeah.
And what, to me, you know, like, it makes very obvious sense that this is something that needs to be funded, right? It's like not a question to me personally. That just yes, like I think for like when the funding is like when funding is cut, I think that people kind of maybe make the argument that different countries should solve their own problems or something, you know? And that's kind of that's not my argument, but that's kind of what I think people assume. That's a hard thing. It doesn't make sense to me. But what do you think, like, why, apart from it's a humanitarian, it's a basic need, why is this important to address, and why is it important to address right now?
That statement is something else. And I don't want to associate myself with it, so let me...
No.
I'm not going to answer your question, but yeah, I'm but just also, being careful yeah. of what I'm going to say.
Also, no worries. If I say something that's not... It's fine.
Countries should be, especially the African countries, they should, or the Global South, they should be looking after their citizens. That's the argument that we can't run away from. We can't shy away from that. The problem here is the manner of which this thing was done, this whole funding cut was done. You can't just come in today and say we are cutting funding without preparing the people. First, when you came in, you prepared them in months or years to say we are coming in, we are going to provide services for this and this and this and that. So the administration of that particular country, don't worry about procuring ARVs, for example, because we are coming in to fund those. And obviously the government will take that money and put it somewhere else. There's no money that just is sitting there, just sitting, waiting for such things. So the issue with, or the problem with this situation is how it was done. Mm-hmm. It was immediate, it was insensible, it was like an attack on those countries that USAID was covering. So, but in the long run, that's how things should be. So if I was Donald Trump, I would say, I'm giving you a period of however many years or months, I will face this thing, the funding, like in steps. I will start by so that you can start preparing. And also, it shouldn't have been a blanket approach. You look at the country situation. For example, maybe you look at South Africa, you say, oh, we are going to redo your budgets in a month's time. So consider putting money aside for this, because we will be pulling out maybe so much money over the period of so many years. So yeah, I think that's how it should have been done. But going back to the question that you asked earlier, in terms of what countries or what can be done right now, Africa and the Global South countries have been following what US is doing, like the criminalization of people who use drugs, sex workers, LGBTQI people and all of that, putting them in jail. What do you need when a person is in jail? You need to feed them. You need to make sure that they have their medical needs are met. There's a lot that is going on. There's a lot of money that is sitting there. So if they can start moving away from this approach, the war on drugs, for example, and use that money, put it into public health, they won't have to go and beg for US funding or international donors to fund the services.
That's great. Thank you so much for, I'll just like also say, I want to be mindful of time. I could talk with you for forever if you'd let me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you just said a lot of things that are very powerful, and a lot to think about, and also thank you so much for saying them. Thank you. Is there anything, like what, let me think, how do you phrase, what kind of, what, like, I don't, let's see, how long maybe? Okay. Do you have, 10 more minutes?
Yeah,
is that okay?
I think
okay. Yeah, what kinds of, like, what kind of movements are there now? Like, are there movements to kind of these decriminalization or legalization movements, or things that are kind of like, you know, what Colombia has been doing with drug policy, movements to kind of like shift into a radically new paradigm of doing drugs, or not doing drugs, but, you know, of drug policy. So is there, are there movements now to kind of, that are working on really kind of changing a lot of that rhetoric?
Yeah. South Africa is decriminalized cannabis in 2018. That's a good step into the right direction, I guess, but not all the drugs. And there's a lot of resistance when it comes to, even with the cannabis, societal minds have not shifted from their own drugs, because that's what they've been told. Drugs are bad, drugs are going to collapse, families collapse, the economy and all of that. So they still, and remember that government is made by people, and those people are coming from where? Communities. And those people are occupying higher position, they are decision makers. So there's been resistance with decriminalization of cannabis. It came through because of the constitutional ruling. And if it wasn't for that, and also it was more of a cultural thing of the Rastafarians in the country that were saying, we are like, because in South Africa we have a constitution, they were saying that it's unconstitutional because it's our culture, it's our way of living. So what do you mean we cannot use cannabis and all of that? So that's how we managed to get that. But it, when it comes to other drugs, the situation is still bad. It's still criminalized. We are found with however quantities of substances, we are thrown in jail. And sometimes police targets people who use drugs on the ground because they are an easy target for them to meet their monthly stats. Just take them, put them in prison, and that cycle. And that is creating even more problems, because once you start interfacing or in, with the justice system or the law, you get a criminal record. You come back, you can't find a job. You can't go back to school. You can't do a lot of things. You can't get grants, whatever. So it's affecting individuals on the ground. But we are meeting as civil society organization also to like start the discussion around the decriminalization of all drugs. We are working on see how best we can approach the issue, whether take it through the constitutional court as well, or draft a bill that is going to be presented to the politicians in parliament and all of that and debated in the country. But that will be a long process. That might take 10 years or 20 years. We have seen with the sex work decriminalization that in South Africa it's been running for so long, it's over 10 or 20 years, if I'm not mistaken, and nothing has been achieved. So, yeah, in terms of that, in terms of changing policies, but what we have done, because for so many years, we've been speaking as individual organizations, individual, like you find an organization there that will go and talk, and then when the funding is finished, then another organization will find funding and then go and talk about the very same issues. And we have seen that that process on its own is not working. So we have established now what we call the people who use drugs sector, which comprises of organizations that form a constituent of the sector. And the sector, represent the needs of people who use drugs is different peoples is that are coming from different organizations. The advantage of that is we are protecting the organizations themselves, because there are certain things that organizations cannot allow you to do. Like, for example, speaking with you right now, for some organization that will be, I will have to get
permission
from, yeah. But because I'm representing people who use drug sector, I don't need all of that. I can just go and talk about, or I can approach any politician, I can approach any lawmaker and speak about these issues without fearing that he's going to target my organization, because I'm not coming from an organization, I'm coming from civil society. We have a very vibrant civil society in South Africa, which even now, as we speak, in terms of the US funding cuts, they are engaging with the government, or we are engaging with the government to say, we understand that there's no money, but we need to cover these issues. We understand that there are other priorities that you had before the announcement of the funding, but in order for us to safeguard the gains that we have made, we need to make things like money available somewhere, somehow.
That was Glass, a South African activist, speaking with KABU reporter Anna Wilcox about the impact of USAID funding cuts on HIV and AIDS services and harm reduction in South Africa. You've been listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
That's Doc Watson, one of the many artists you can hear on Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, when we share a wide variety of traditional and contemporary